Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got actor, life coach, and just all-around great dude to have a conversation with, Greg Audino. But more about him in a minute. First, I want to talk about something really weird. And you're going to have to tell me if this is an area that I've stepped into that is uniquely mine, because this is a thought that occurred to me the other day, and I realized I've never heard anyone talk about this. I've never had a conversation with anybody who's talked about what I'm about to talk about. So if you're one of these people, please contact me and let me know that I'm not alone in this weird thought. Maybe you should let me know if I am. I digress. Let's get into it. So here's the thing. I'm a human being with suicidal ideation. That means that suicide can come into my thoughts at any given time during the day. And it also means it doesn't always come with actual feelings of wanting to kill myself or actual sadness or anything like that. It just presents itself as an option. When I'm making a sandwich, it's like I could get out the lettuce and the tomatoes and I could kill myself. It's like I'm not going to put the kill myself on the sandwich. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. It's just a thing that pops into my head at random. I'm just wired that way. It's a weird thing. But that's what suicidal ideation is. It just pops into your head, whether you want it or not. It doesn't always come with actual feelings of wanting to commit suicide. So that's where we get into this next territory. The thing that I've not heard anyone discuss is once in a while, when things are going really, really well for me, I'll have a thought, you know, this would be a good place to check out. Everything's going really well. Why fuck it up? You know, let's check out before it goes sideways on us. And, it's an interesting thing. It's not something that happens all too often, because quite frankly, I'm not really a person who thinks things are going well most of the time. I feel like the rest of the world is comprised of really talented, capable people making Mona Lisas, and the world is full of Rembrandts and Van Goghs, and I've got a Denny's placemat and a handful of crayons. And I've learned to be really proud of the things that I'm able to do with that placemat and those crayons. Because it's mine. It's uniquely mine. But, is this off the rails already? You know what I need? I need to get back on the rails. And the person to help me do that is Greg Audino. He's a fantastic guy. We have a really nuanced and thick, dense conversation about personal responsibility, about developing yourself as a human being, and just learning to laser focus on something in order to give yourself that drive. And it was really inspiring to have this conversation. So I'm going to stop talking. You guys hit me up and you let me know if that whole, wanting to take the parachute, rather than see what's up the next five floors. You let me know if that's uniquely my experience and if I should be talking to my therapist about it, or if that's something that everybody feels once in a while. Is that a weird thought? Let's not jump off the building. Let's just jump into this conversation with Greg Audino. Yeah, so we're rolling right now. We're going.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is it. So I guess right out of the gate, the first thing to say is, hi, how's it going?
I'm pretty swell, Chris. How are you?
Nice. I'm doing pretty good. A little lack of sleep and whatnot, but, you know, I'll catch up on that later at some point, I guess.
Mm. Yes, please do. I'm a big advocate. I'm a big 8 hours a night guy, so but please do.
How do you do that?
I don't know. It's one of these things, like in high school, I started getting on a bit of a health kick in high school, and yeah. I think I was just listening. I watched this whole hour just be a conversation about my sleep habits. I got on this health kick in high school, and like part of that was just 8 hours a night. I was basically just like listening to all these sorts of plateau pieces of health advice. I've heard 8 hours is still good. That doesn't seem to be one of the myths that's been debunked so far.
Sure.
So I'm to it. I also stay very active, so I need a lot of sleep anyway.
Yeah.
If you creep into like the 10 hours range, you're kind of wasting your time, in my opinion, but I don't know. I make time for it. It's been a part of my schedule since, you know, for like 10 years now. So I'm just used to it.
Well, but you are a pretty busy person. I mean, looking over your Instagram and your Facebook and all the other various things that you're doing. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, I try to buzz around. I have a lot. I always have a few tricks up my sleeve. I mean, I've been self-employed my entire adult life, so if I don't keep busy and like generate ways of to keep busy, I'm sort of in trouble. So, yeah, that's also a big part of my life.
Just keeping yourself busy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's again, I sort of have to. It's an interesting thing. I haven't ever. You know, I've been self-employed all this time, so it's constantly up to me to seek new avenues of, like, you know, making money and then just growing and staying afloat. And it's basically, you know, if you're self-employed, as you may know, I mean, it seems like you're quite busy with the podcast here.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard to shut your brain off because you have to keep, you know, you have to be responsible for everything. Whereas if you do have a standard job, I mean, most of it's taken care of. You really just have to show up and you're told what to do.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, if you're not in that position, yeah, I mean, time management becomes a very valuable skill. Obviously, self-discipline becomes a valuable skill. But meanwhile, it's just hard to keep going or to not keep going.
Yeah, but that's not something that people typically come by on their own right away. Well, where did you pick this stuff up?
What do you mean? Like these, like that realization or these habits or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because there is a process, of becoming the kind of person who takes care of things. You know, every single human being on the planet has the same basic toolkit. But then you start filling up your toolkit with these other ideas and these other habits. And, you know, even sometimes you have to overcome some wiring that was put in there in the first place that's not helping you. So,
sure.
So yeah, with these kinds of these kinds of things where you're going through, and creating a discipline for yourself, where did you first get the idea to do that?
You know, it wasn't so much of an idea. I've never really been one of these people that has like a boner for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Basically, the thing is, I just like, I mean, so I started off as an actor, as you may know. You know, that's just what I wanted to do. And it's what I was so passionate about. So I did it. And to me, that just, you know, that's like arguably the most competitive industry in the world. I mean, it's the whole cliche about actors going to LA and working as waiters the rest of their lives. And I just didn't want, I got into it and I really wanted to master it. And it was easy because I had so much passion for it and I was so obsessed with it to begin with. So if anything, it might just come from this, like this obsession that I get with certain things. So it started there. And I also like, I didn't want it to be a free ride. Cause you know, one thing that's always meant a lot to me is like, I don't know, it's like accountability, if you will. So yeah. Like for me, if I was making enough money to like just survive on acting, which I was, to me, it's like, well, I need to be putting 40 hours a week into this, like any other person would. So I just found ways to keep busy because I just didn't want to feel like there was more that I could be doing.
Yeah.
You know, because I was just always so kind of driven with that. And then, you know, I still do some acting. It was my full-time job up until about a year ago. At which point I started really good into self-development more. I got my life coaching certification. I started my website with all the donations that come with that. So I've kind of been doing them both, but you know, bringing that to life is a whole other, it's starting a whole new business. It's the same thing.
But I mean, I've known a lot of actors and, you know, I have some friends that are out there and they're still in the hustle, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I recognize the work ethic that does need to go into something like that. But I've also known a lot of actors who were, you know, pretty happy to just let things land on them while they waited tables.
Yeah.
You know? And there is a discipline to it. So,
yeah.
But that's a thing. It's like I'm always fascinated to hear where people got their drive from.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Well, I think now we're getting into something good here. Well, the thing with me is that, like, I suspect, now that you put it that way, that some of it might have come from, like, my level of pride or, like, a certain level of ego, right? Because I just, like, you know, the whole thing with acting is that it's just, you know, it's an industry that's, like, categorized by failure. You know, it's like if you're not a household name making $20 million a film, somehow you're like you're a failure to those who don't understand the industry, of course.
Yeah.
Which most people. So to me, I just like I assume I had this sort of like ego and level of pride that just told me I have refused to be like a statistic with this stuff. And I mean, that's kind of like, you know, again, I got into it like just like, you know, I started acting in college. I started doing it professionally right when I got out of college. So I was I still kind of had that like that adolescent piss and vinegar about that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's probably that would be where it started, is just like a refusal to not make it work out, because you know, it's I'm from Rhode Island. Everyone here is very blue collar, very hardworking. And it's like, you know, there are not really actors or creative types for the most part. Of course, there are exceptions.
Sure.
But to me, like, I think it was almost I didn't want to my not only myself, but I didn't want my community to feel as though I was like wasting my time. And to be fair, like, you know, I don't want to sound like a douchebag, but acting is just something that comes very naturally to me, you know.
No, and there are some people that like they just get it.
Yeah,
but I mean it requires. I mean, it does require a couple of things. It does require you to be completely in touch with your ego and with your ability to trust yourself and have some confidence in yourself, while at the same time be willing to fall into something with a level of vulnerability. That you almost have to wear like a shield, because there's a big fear component that keeps a lot of people from achieving. And and so, I mean, it sounds like you didn't have to worry about that.
I didn't. Well, but here's why. Like where I was going with that was, you know, so people have different skills, right? Some people are great carpenters. Some people are great painters. Some people are great with numbers, whatever.
Yeah.
Mine is acting. It just comes to me. not, I don't think it's any more or less important than the things I just mentioned. Right. But the thing is, because it comes to me naturally, I was able to reap immediate rewards from it, right? And ultimately, we're not going to be, you know, we're driven by the result on the other side of something. So if we get a taste of that result, it's so much easier to stay driven because you trust in your process and you trust in your ability, because all of a sudden you see that it, you know, that you can do it.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's kind of like the rich become richer. And so because I was able to get results like right out of the gate, like just when I started it in college, and then when I, you know, right away when I started it after college on a professional level, it made me work that much harder. And a lot of people might suspect the opposite, that like if you're doing well, that like you'd rest on your laurels. But I never wanted to do that. And I think part of the reason is because, like, quite frankly, I did not endure a whole lot of struggle growing up. You know, I had a great childhood. You know, I never missed a meal or anything. So to me, but I was always aware of that. So for me, I've always seen that as like a gift. Like, I'm very aware of the fact that I have a lot of blessings in life. And because of that, I don't want to slack off. You know, I feel that much more responsibility to like use my advantages and to send the elevator back down. So to me, I was like, well, you know, I don't want to be somebody that just lived off their blessings their whole life. I want to make sure that I'm putting a lot of work in and kind of being able to make gains because of both, like, you know, the advantages that I have no control over and the work ethic that I can control. So I think all of that equated to, you know, all the work I was able to do as an actor and the kind, you know, and what I have going on now in self-development. So it's kind of the same. And honestly, like this, like, you know, life coaching is another thing that comes naturally to me. I actually wanted to be a marriage counselor prior to being an actor, and then, you know, some things happened and I decided to be an actor. But it's kind of like the desire to sort of listen and offer support is also kind of one of my innate things. And, you know, your genetic advantages don't have to determine your future, of course.
Yeah.
And I too bad that people think that way, but they can offer you boosts, you know, and to capitalize on things that you already get benefits from without much effort.
No, absolutely. Because I mean, honestly, you can have, you know, that is a thing that I say to people often is, you know, like you take an actor, you know, and people will say, you know, they hire the handsome guy. Well, yeah, of course they did. But at the same time, when the handsome guy shows up, he's got to be able to act.
Yeah.
Or he's not going to get a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And that's something that a lot of people forget in Hollywood. They're so,
I mean, I got friends out there who are, you know, who are doing just fine. I mean, my friend, you know, my friend Michael Cornacia, he's a working actor. He's a guy that I would consider to be one of those, you know, that guy. Oh, I saw him in 6 Feet Under. Oh, I saw him in that thing. you know, a guy that, I was in a zombie movie in, like years ago. Now he's going to be in, Clint Eastwood's next movie,
That's
as
awesome.
The lead, which is insane. Cause I'm like, Paul,
the lead. He's got it made. Good for him.
Yeah. And it is, it's good for him, but he got there not only by working hard, but by, strangely ignoring the advice of a lot of people and deciding not to be an asshole. And it worked out for him.
Yeah. Wait, he was, you're saying he was like advised to be an asshole? What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that we were all kind of aware of is like, to get ahead, you gotta be an asshole.
Oh.
And it's like, no, 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 no. Assholes want you to think that.
Yeah,
no, to get ahead, it really helps. It really helps to be decent. I mean, it's just good advice for life, not even just work, but your interpersonal relationships with other human beings in general are going to be a lot better if you're just decent.
Oh, yeah, without question. I couldn't agree more. And I will say, as somebody who's been, you know, a part of Hollywood. I might suggest, I mean, it's hard for me to say because it's not like I've, you know, worked in all kinds of industries, but in Hollywood, a good attitude seems to go particularly far just because there is such a stigma around like douchebag actors.
Yeah.
You know, and because the hours are so long, it's, you know, and so many celebrities have kind of like, you know, turned to wretched behavior over time.
Yeah.
There is a lot of emphasis on like who's fun to work with and who's not.
Right.
Again, I'm sure that exists in all industries, but
yeah, you know, absolutely. For
what might be some Hollywood, it's definitely prevalent there.
So going back, I mean, with all of this, especially with, you know, going through and having the confidence to give yourself the boost to get a career in such a let's say an industry that's pretty well known for teaching people how to deal with rejection.
Yeah,
you know, there's that, but there's also this piece of the confidence to be able to empathize with a human being to the point where you think, I might have some good advice for you. I mean, those are some very particular personality traits. Is that something that you've always been able to tap into?
Let me see. Well, the rejection aspect, it's hard to really answer that. I mean, the level of rejection you experience in Hollywood is like nothing else. So for me, I don't know if I really, I don't think I really was handed a lot or a little rejection prior to becoming an actor. So my experience or, you know, in handling rejection was sort of neutral. But I was obsessed with learning the ins and outs of acting. And if you are serious about acting and you're studying it, one of the first things you get to know is that you need to get comfortable with rejection.
Yeah.
So to me, I just understood it very quickly as part of the business. And I was, I was up for mastering any part of the business that I needed to. So,
but it can get pretty personal at times. I mean, I've only gone on a few auditions myself before I decided, I was interested in the work, but, I moved out of California and that was it. It was like, if you're not in California, there's only so many things you can do. So I went back to music and that was my thing. And music worked out pretty well for me. But, the thing I do remember about auditions was, I remember people talking to each other about you in front of you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun.
You develop
a thick skin if you're lucky.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, like I would argue that a lot of the reason, you know, actors have this reputation for being sort of like vain and self-absorbed and like always advertising themselves is sort of a way of combating a lack of thick skin, just because, like, I do feel like, because again, they're giving themselves so much to something that provides very little reward. It's really important to like reassure oneself of some sort of significance. So I do think that that's, you know, so I mean, in a way, yes, you have to have thick skin, and you can probably put that face on, but I do think that like the insecurity that inevitably comes with it sort of manifests through a lot of these actor stereotypes, if you will.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, yeah, I'll just, at least from my perspective, look, you get to a point, or at least I did, where you just have to start realizing that these casting directors are people. And for those listening who don't know what casting directors are, they're basically the people that you audition for, and they're hired by the producers to find actors. That's their specialty. So it's unless you're like at a callback and you're right about to, you're very close to the role, you probably won't be auditioning for producers. So the actors go through casting directors. So you just start to realize that these casting directors who these gatekeepers are, they're just people all the same. and you
well,
start.
Well, they've had to deal with how many people that day before you walked in.
Yeah, you have to step into their shoes too. It's just a business for them, and if you're an actor and you don't understand the business element of it, you're fucked.
Yeah,
and you know, and it's just I don't. I mean, to me, like it's a lot of it. It's about just self-worth, like. And I just got to the point where I was like, I realized how much I relied on these people's approval, and it was so unhealthy. So, you know, you start to reflect on things that are much more meaningful in life, you know, like nothing any, at least the way I thought about it was that no casting director, no job, no status is ever going to provide me with more value and fulfillment than like my family and my friends and my home. So all of a sudden, you know, this job that you start to like unhealthily throw way too much of yourself at is put into perspective.
Yeah.
And it takes the pressure off. That's what happened. That's what I was able to do anyway. And I really, this is like what I preach to actors all the time. It makes me so sad how they just sort of mistake their self-worth for their booking rate. It's very depressing. So I make a point of telling actors that I like them regardless of how many jobs they book. If I do like them, that is. But yeah.
But with all of that, I mean, it's I do find it pretty fascinating that you seem to have a pretty high level of emotional intelligence. But that's something that people usually have to develop, and it seems like it's something that you've kind of always had. Where did that come from?
Well, thank you. I guess I don't know. Let's think back here. So when I was very young, I was a very like expressive and creative child. Maybe it's genetics, maybe it's because of like how I was raised. Like my mother in particular was like always just encouraging me to be myself. And, nobody was ever telling me not to do things, if you will. And in a way it's like, God, I'm really trying to like dig for answers here. I think in a way, like in Rhode Island and New England, there's like a lot of emphasis on like manliness.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, completely.
And like, especially in my family, my guys in my family are like all construction, fucking mechanics, carpenters. They're very gifted with their hands and handiwork. And so there's like this kind of rough and tumble attitude. And for me as a kid, I exhibited both that and like all of these other creative ventures. Like I was always being silly and like being a goofball and like sort of very effeminate maybe. But at the same time, I was like such a bruiser, and I would like play sports and I would just like crush people. So like, and it's like, it's almost as though I had like, you know, all of these more like abstract sort of, again, like maybe effeminate qualities were like okay, because I still had like this toughness, if you will.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm describing. I mean, I don't know if I'm describing that properly, but basically, I was like, everything I did was pretty much okay.
Yeah.
So again, I don't know where like that level of creativity came in. Whether it's because it was always encouraged or because I was born with it, but it was there nonetheless. And then I remember, I used to always just sort of think about things differently. Like when I was a kid lying in bed, I remember very young, I was like really pondering like my own consciousness and my existence. And it was sort of like these weird otherworldly thoughts about like exactly who I am and what my identity is. And it used to freak me out when I would like think about it too deeply. So that was there. And then when I was like in sixth grade, I got my heart broken. I was like madly in love. I was madly in love with this girl from sixth grade to 11th grade.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, and we were friends, but she was always into her studies. She like wasn't interested in boys. So she like never, I was very clear about my feelings with her, but she never wanted to date. And I was never mad at her about this, you know, cause I didn't, you know, it's not like she owed me anything.
Right.
But I had like this deep love for this girl for 5 years as a kid, you know, and I was like dodging other girlfriends at the time because I swore that like it wasn't right. It was like it wasn't right for my love because of my devotion to her, which wasn't even being answered.
Yeah.
So I developed like this very extreme, again, like all, like bordering on obsessive love and like deep, deep feeling at such a young age. And like the way that I would contemplate these things and like this like devotion is just very uncommon for a child. And yeah, so that's something that always stuck with me, was like how intensely I used to just handle emotional things. And I don't know if like that, my feelings for that girl started it, or if they were again like the product of something I was born with. I guess maybe
Sounds like there's certainly an obsessive streak in there, and yeah. And as you became more of an adult, it sounds like what happened was you found a way to harness it into something that was healthy and not harmful.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I also just, I think that's true. I think it's being used in a much better way now. But at the same time, Chris, like I, especially like in my studies, as I've gotten, you know, into self-development so much more, I've really learned the value of balance.
Yeah.
So I tend to care very intensely about things. So like the things that I want to mean a lot to me mean a lot to me. But at the same time, I allow a lot of balance in my life. Like I don't work too hard. I always make time for friends. You know, I always make time for exercise, 8 hours a night, sleep. Just talk about it. You know, so like,
you know, things that are going to serve you.
Right. So it's there and it's there, but it's just in a healthier way. And I think it's harnessed appropriately, but I guess there's still that spark there that lets me to do things in a good way. That was fun. I appreciated that question. That was a nice little dive.
You know, and that's the thing that I find that can be pretty interesting is when you can take something within yourself that, you know, depending on how you feed it, depends on how it rewards you. You know, so like if you've got an obsessive streak, you can turn that into gambling or, you know, sex addiction or, you know, food addiction or having to touch a doorknob 7 times. You can pretty much feed any of those things that are going to cause you, you know, some kind of a problem, or you can know those things about yourself and then start applying them in a way that's going to give you a leg up. Like if you're a person with an obsessive tendency, that's actually not a bad thing if you're trying to get yourself discipline on track. Because obsession will really help you get yourself discipline on track. And that can be healthy for you if you're kind of paying attention to it. And it sounds like you are. But my question about where you are now, because I find the self-development thing pretty fascinating as well. What was the first thing that led you toward, say your first self-development book?
Oh man. Yeah. I think I started reading them back in just a little bit, getting curious about it back in high school, because in high school I was sort of prompted to start thinking about larger subject. The first time I ever like kind of got on something was in my 10th grade religion class. I don't know. I just like, I had this teacher that was so passionate about religion. I was always sort of neutral about it.
Yeah.
But I just, his enthusiasm for it really, and like the depth of the very subject, made me ponder it intensely. And then I took a philosophy class that made me do the same thing. So at that point I started sort of reading about this stuff. You know, and I would reflect a lot. I was always reflecting on things. Actually, just yesterday, I was talking about this email that I sent. I was 20, and I emailed three teachers that I had in high school. And I was a nice kid in high school, but I was like, you know, I had these teachers, and they were really nice guys, and they like kind of let a lot go in class. And they, you know, their kindness got taken advantage of. And I wrote these three teachers a long email explaining like how sorry I was for taking advantage of their kindness like 2 years later. And like, as if they cared, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But see, it mattered to you.
Yeah. Like, so I was, and
you needed them to know that you knew.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, it's okay. you know, like you were fine. anyway, so I think, so yeah, I always kept an eye on, basically, I always kept an eye on these things, if you will, like my own growth, my own development. And it started in high school when I started reading about like philosophy and religion a little bit, psychology as well. But it definitely got shelved to an extent while I was like all, you know, balls to the wall on acting.
Yeah.
Now I was still making little lists for myself because, yeah, I've always had this sort of self-awareness, and when I wasn't happy, I was very aware of it. So I was always like, you know, aware of like how I wasn't feeling good about things and like considering ways to remedy them. So I always sort of kept my eye on my own self-development, but I wasn't focusing so much on other people. And this is like where I start transitioning into what I'm doing now. So forgive me if I'm getting ahead of schedule.
Not at all.
Okay. But because basically what happened was, you know, it was a few things that happened. So that like triggered this transition into self-development. The first thing is that I split up with my girlfriend who I was very much in love with. And it was like a mutual split, but then I wanted to get back together. She didn't. And I was just like devastated. Yeah. You know, other things happened, but I had such a hard time getting past it. And I knew I had people to talk to, and I wanted to talk to people, and I did talk to those people. But eventually I just felt like I was a burden. And even though I still needed to talk, I felt like I had exhausted my resources. So I wasn't talking anymore. And I just desperately wanted somebody to listen to me. And I recall one night I was laying in bed, crying myself to sleep, the usual. And I was considering calling suicide prevention, not because I was feeling suicidal, but because I knew that they would just talk to me and that they would listen to me.
Yeah.
And in those times, that was the first trigger, because I learned the value, like the true value there is for being a support system for somebody. And then time goes on. Let's fast forward a little bit to 2016, the election.
Yeah.
You know, when the elections go on, all of these issues in the world are kind of paid extra attention to. So all of a sudden, you're just like exposed to like what real problems in the world are.
Yeah.
You know, so not only am I now aware of like all of these people, like on my own, like socioeconomic level, who could be having struggles just the same way that I was, but I'm also again being reminded of the fact that like, you know, these are indeed first, you know, I mean, everyone perceives pain differently, but, you know, people are dealing with more like extreme pain, like, you know, severe hunger and you know, and famine and war-torn countries and everything. And, you know, again, things are just put into perspective a little bit more, and you realize that there are a lot of people that need help. And at the same time, there's all these people on fucking Facebook who are talking about how this needs to be better and that needs to be better, but nobody's doing anything. And me, like I said, I really, you know, I'm kind of into accountability. I looked at myself and I said, oh, I also think things should be better, but I'm also one of these people who's not doing anything.
Yeah.
So I start to look for outlets to like start giving back a little bit, because I start realizing that realistically my life, my daily life with acting is all about me. And for somebody who's been given all the gifts that I had, I was using them all on myself, and I wasn't spending any time on other people. So the wheels are turning a little bit more. And then I think the final straw was on March 5th, 2017, or maybe March 6th. It was the day after my 26th birthday party. It was a Sunday morning. I was hungover, and I'm watching Netflix hungover on a Sunday morning. We've all been there. And this Tony Robbins documentary shows up. I Am Not Your Guru.
Yeah.
And I basically only knew Tony Robbins through like Shallow Hal, that Jack Black movie where they were calling him Banana Hands.
Yeah.
So funny.
You know, but good old Banana Hands Robbins.
So funny. But I, you know, this doc, and a lot of people have mixed feelings about Tony Robbins, especially these days. I don't, you know, which is too bad. I don't know what the truth about him. I like Tony Robbins.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, just about anybody can be a mixed bag, but, there's a lot of, I find that with Tony Robbins that, you know, there's a lot of really good information there. He's got a lot of really good insight, and there are some things that we might not agree on.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, that's the best part about any of these self-help journeys is that you take the pieces that light you up and you leave the rest of them there.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Without question.
But if you just cross your arms, you're not going to catch any of it. And you're going to be in the same fucking place you were in before.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And that's what a lot of people are doing.
Yeah. You have to be open to enlightenment.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, we're just so wired to just kind of look for information that just affirms what we already believe.
Yeah.
Filtering out everything else, which is too bad. But anyway, you know, that documentary, to me, I just saw a lot of people that were moved by this man whose life seems to be dedicated just to helping other people.
Yeah.
Tony's obviously doing very well for himself, but all the lives that he's impacted, it's just so inspirational. And, you know, one thing he talks about is just how much pressure is relieved once you shift the focus off of yourself and onto others. And I can attest to that. You know, I really, I can attest to that. I try to do that as much as I can and kind of always offer help where I can, like even outside of my coaching clients. And it's just a good feeling. It's just the good feeling of usefulness. But anyway, you know, Tony is a life coach, as opposed to like, that's how he identifies as opposed to like a motivational speaker.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, I just was looking for outlets that I could help. You know, in which I could help and things that come naturally to me. And again, it kind of goes back to these things I wanted to do before, this reflection, this support system, this listening. So to me, like a good way to give back seemed like getting a life coaching certification. So I started, you know, I did that. I found a program and I took it and I graduated. And I mean, the rest is history. The videos are a little bit different, you know, the videos I do on, I have a site, you know, I make videos that kind of tackle life's common problems and like with new perspectives. And I try to make them a little funny, a little grounded. Like it's not too flowery and preachy. So the videos are like one thing I do. And then of course I have my life coaching clients, separate from them. So it's just sort of evolved in its own way and it's extremely fulfilling. It's just, I put a lot more time into it now than I do my acting just because it's very meaningful work to me. And I just feel like it makes more of a difference and it's the world. I just think it's more of an important thing for the world than like yet another actor.
Yeah. And I completely identify with that.
Yeah.
You know, when I started doing this podcast, it was more or less because, I mean, quite frankly, I was looking for one that was doing this. So that I could listen to it.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of mental health podcasts, a lot of, mental wellness kind of podcasts. And I, you know, they just didn't click for me the way I wanted them to click. So I was like, well, I'll do my own. I'll do it the way I want to hear it. And maybe it'll resonate with the five people that need to hear it the way I need to hear it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you come to find out that there's a lot more people out there who need to hear things from other people than you thought.
Oh, without question. Everybody, Chris, you know, like everybody is dealing. So many people are just dealing with something. And I think that that's why this sort of podcast is fantastic. It's why I believe in life coaching. It's why I believe in therapy. You know, there are just so many people that need help and they just don't know where to turn.
Right.
You know, it's devastating to me. So
there's
yeah,
a lot I mean, of that's pressure, you know, from society and from other people to look like you're not fucking up. You know, especially with the culture that we have, where just about everything is on display at any given time. I think that people feel more under the microscope now, and that anxiety of having to present yourself publicly a certain way, maybe more than we have in the past, because we still haven't figured out how to wrangle the beast of the internet yet in a healthy way. We're still figuring it out. It can do a lot of good, but it can do a lot of damage, and we just don't really know where the lines are yet. We all keep bumping against the edges of the electric fence, and I think it's frying us a little bit. And I know that I've felt the effects of that, not really knowing where reality is 100% of the time. And then coming to terms with the idea that you're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, what I thought I understood, I had just kind of placed myself in this box, and I collected all of these ideas along the way. And now, what are these ideas doing here? Are they serving me? Are they true? And what can I let go of and mm-hmm. be honest with myself about? And I think that sometimes people need permission to be able to go through their shit and admit, yeah, I'm having a rough time sorting things out. And that's ultimately really all I wanted to do, was to be able to give people a place where we could have a conversation and we could say, yeah, you know, here's how I, you know, tripped over myself and managed to pick myself up and dust myself off and come out the other side with some more tools. Now, what do you got? What tools do you got? Oh, well, these are the ones I got. Oh, okay, cool. And then we're just comparing ideas. Eventually, some of this is going to stick with somebody.
Yeah, without question. I agree. It's sharing certain ideas, like, you know, like you are on this podcast, is, you know, it's bound to help certain people in certain ways. And I hope that you have, you know, diverse conversations, if you will.
People completely. I mean, that's kind of the point. It's like, you know, I like talking to, you know, the actors and comedians and musicians and people like that. But I also like talking to people who are doing completely different things. Like I just talked to a school teacher, who went through some stuff and came out the other side with some knowledge that I think could help some people. I've talked to yoga instructors. I talked to a person who was just, you know, just a lady who goes to work, has a job, has a kid, and just had a hard go of it for a while. And it was let's talk about it. Let's bond over both being bipolar. and we had a great conversation. And I think that's kind of what makes it so brilliant is not necessarily my concept, because that's not brilliant. That's just people talking. But to get the thing about it that I love, and the thing about it that I think is brilliant, and the thing about what you're doing, is just the idea that you might be able to take a handful of things that you spend a lot of time working on. You know, the same way a carpenter might carve out a table and say, this table is going to be really good for somebody. I spent a lot of time figuring out how to do this. And now I'm going to go and I'm going to make another one. And now I'm going to make a chair. And now I'm going to make this box. Now I'm going to carve a flute, you know, and take all of those things. And it's going to be for someone. And it's using the talents that you've accumulated and the experiences that you've had with your life and turning them into something that you can be of service with. It sounds kind of lofty when you put it that way, but ultimately, I mean, if we're not here to help each other, I mean, what are we doing?
I couldn't agree more. And I'm sure you find it very interesting to see just how vulnerable and open people want to be. And, you know, on a podcast, that's your platform to do so. Like, that's one of these times when it's like, it's okay to start feeling more comfortable about revealing yourself a little bit more and opening up in a way that we all sort of crave, but don't know when to do it, when to act on it. So that's like one thing that I love about podcasts, particularly podcasts that are, you know, that revolve around mental health, And I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, people have different experiences that relate well to different people. You know, I'm sure some people will resonate much more with what a school teacher has to say than what a life coach has to say, just because of, you know, how their experiences are lining up. So I think it's, yeah, I mean, it's not only a great outlet for tools to give people, but it's just yet another example of how it is okay to reveal oneself and to be vulnerable. And that is, I will say that, like, yeah, this, it seems like the world is in trouble, but I think because everyone agrees that it seems like it's in trouble, there is this fierce, like, pursuit of things like this. There is so much more talk about mental health these days, as there should be, because, you know, anxiety and depression levels are at an all-time high and are rising astronomically. People are finally starting to listen. You know, people are finally starting to open up more, which is great. So I do think that, you know, podcasts like this and jobs like mine are starting to, you know, make headway and sort of win the battle, which is very nice to see. And
it definitely seems to be entering the public consciousness more. It looks like there's really a need for this, because there just seems to be a lot of people out there who are going, I don't know what to do with this, and I don't feel like I'm getting answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without question. And it's interesting. I'd be very curious to see how things progress in terms of this. Like, if it does just become a matter of so many people sort of just spilling their guts and being open and being vulnerable all the time. I mean, in a way, it's like, you know, so much freedom and so much liberation can often, like, lead to lack of actual discipline sometimes, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it, you know, and, like, you're just so much into, like, what you're feeling and wanting to express that logic can sometimes go out the window. So,
no, for sure.
You know what I mean?
You know, that is definitely an important conceit in all of this too. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, there is another side to that coin.
Yeah.
Because once you have an understanding of the fact that there's something off, there's something not right, and you're looking for some kind of a solution, the other side of the coin is that you've got to implement some solutions.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea isn't just to say out loud, I'm fucked up and I feel better because I got to say so. The idea is to look at that and say, how can I fix this? How can I work with what I have right now? And that's why I think what you're doing, especially, there's a lot of people who are having, let's say, not chemical mental health problems. Something
absolutely.
That's behavior related. It's wiring. It's things like that. And a lot of times, getting yourself, you know, out of some bad habits, or being able to look at yourself in the mirror and have somebody be able to present you with some solutions, is going to be able to get you out of the problem that you're in.
Yeah, Chris, you're so right. And I mean, here's the thing. I mean, people, if you are so pent up, if you are so suppressed, and you finally get a taste of liberation, as a lot of people are feeling as though they're doing now, it's so easy to just unravel, just spill everything out, just, you know, just kind of only do things that, like, feel right all the time. And
yeah,
it's like a level of ecstasy. But yes, I mean, this can be highly irresponsible. I actually just wrote this video about self-care and how it can go wrong. And basically, you know, the idea is that, like, a lot of self-care practices are really just extrapolating, like, bad values and, like, a lack of control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of these things that we do, like, treating ourselves are, it's really almost just like going back to childhood, where we're like, we feel like we should only be doing things that feel right all the time. So, yeah, it's dangerous. It gets people into I think, a new form of depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, life coaches are kind of there to help. I mean, I suspect some people might be a little confused as to the differences between life coaches and therapists.
And I try to tell people right out of the gate, you know, it's like, I'm definitely not a therapist. You know, having a conversation with me is about as helpful as, you know, talking to a good-natured dog. It's, you know, you're probably feel a little better afterward, but you might still want to get your stuff checked out.
Oh, man. Well, if I were compared to a dog, I'd be pretty happy with that. They're pretty special. Typically, your therapists are for helping to heal past trauma.
Yes.
Whereas life coaches are for helping to establish goals and habits to develop a certain future that you want. So therapy is much more of a psychological endeavor. Whereas life coaches, you normally just help people hit their goals and create steps and habits they can take to do so. Some of those goals are personal, in which case it does become a little more like therapy. But if, you know, for those who know anything about therapy, life coaching was actually birthed out of cognitive behavioral therapy, because, you know, which is basically not so much about delving into somebody's past to resolve issues, but in having them alter and adjust destructive behavior to, you know, to heal their wounds. And
it's one of the most effective forms of therapy out there, as far as any kind of therapy there is. Cognitive behavioral therapy has had the best results out of anything.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. It's because, you know, when we start to take new action, we start to see different results, and we build experiences and belief systems off those results. You know, action tends to come before motivation. So if you're taking action on something and seeing the benefits from it, all of a sudden these thoughts that you've been telling yourself otherwise cease to exist, you know, and you're starting to create new value systems based on, you know, this new proof that you have. Just taking action on things and altering one's behavior is huge.
Yeah.
It's also like a way to, it's like measurable progress. It's a lot more measurable than just like your thinking patterns. So if you're like taking steps and taking action, you're seeing differences rather than having to like think about whether or not you're making progress. It's there.
Yeah.
That's like kind of what coaching is birthed out of. It's just like, you know, we try to provide clients with action steps at the end of each session that sort of bridge the gap between where they are and where they want to be. Same thing, but, you know, obviously it's different skill sets. And as a life coach, as a responsible one, and trust me, many of them are not, it's important to direct people to therapists and or psychiatrists if we deem it right, if like that's what they need.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. Sometimes people can be walking around with a bubble of their problems around themselves. And as you start to eliminate pieces, other pieces reveal themselves. And so you may not have thought you had some sort of a behavioral problem that came from a trauma until suddenly you've started to do all this weeding out. And what are you left with? You're left with things that you had decided not to look at. And you know, now maybe it's time now to add some therapy on top of self-development. And you know, I mean, it's definitely a thing that can happen to people, you know, throughout that process, is to discover something that they weren't really sure was there. And there are even times when people are able to mask their trauma with another trauma. You know, it's people take one thing and they cover it up with another thing, and then you fix the problem and you still have the roots, and maybe you're not even sure where they came from. But with regards to what you're doing here, I guess the thing that has me really curious is, what was something that you had learned about yourself in the process of going through you know, as you began to read more and understand more and go through this training?
Oh my God. I mean, everything, you know, it's, that's another great tool. That's a good, another great thing about this industry that I'm in is you're able to flip it on yourself. You know, if you're doing it properly. And I don't know, I mean, I've learned a lot about expectation. You know, expectation is a big thing that tends to cripple people, you know.
In what way?
Oh, I mean, expectations everywhere. I mean, so think, like, you know, everything we do is transactional to some degree. You know, even if it is like the most charitable of acts, you do it because you feel you hope you'll feel a sense of satisfaction afterwards. Is it like or an affirmation that you did the right thing?
Yeah.
But like that, I mean, so in that way, like, yeah, I mean, I sit down because I expect the chair is going to support me. You know, I all these things. I eat food because I expect it's going to nourish me. There's always expectation. There's always.
Okay. I'm with you.
But obviously, it can manifest itself in very unhealthy ways, like you know, like the way we put things on relationships, and you know, like work ventures or whatever. You know, it's so easy to only get into things because of what we want on the other side, and sort of use things in that way. And that's when disappointment comes in, because we start to expect, you know, we start to do all these things and enter into like a silent agreement with ourselves. We're like, well, if I do this, they're going to do that for me. I just put a post about this on Instagram actually yesterday. Basically, you know, I got shadow banned on Instagram, which is basically, you know, it's really quick. It's when your engagement is limited because you've like overused a hashtag or something like that. I don't know. When I found this out, and Instagram didn't tell me about this, I had to do some research to figure it out. But when I found out I was shadow banned, well, you know, I was big poopy pants about it. I was like, this is a great business tool. How could they do this? Yada, yada, yada. And then I said, oh, Greg, you disobeyed your own rules. You fell for the trick. I expected something of Instagram. I entered into this agreement, and now I feel shortchanged, you know, as if Instagram owed me something.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if I had just used Instagram for the sake of using Instagram, as opposed to like using it as a means to an end, these things, you know, these meltdowns would not happen.
Right.
So it's you know, it exists on Instagram. It exists more so in like relationships. But it's this idea of like doing things because you expect something to happen. And,
but you can take that dashed expectation. Mm-hmm. And you can displace it into all kinds of unhealthy things when things don't go your way. If you're not aware of the fact that expectation is something that you need to be careful with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, people get swept up in expectation. It's everywhere. It's kind of part of life. It's like a survival, you know, honestly, at its root, it's a survival skill.
Yeah. It's not completely negative.
No. It's, and you know, honestly, that's why people have such a hard time staying present all the time, is because we're wired to think past and future for survival reasons, you know. It's a part of who we are. But you need to have a healthy relationship with it. That's something I've learned about. I think value systems are something I've learned about, you know, just kind of being aware of my own values and making sure that I'm living through them, and like assessing what behavior of mine is aligned with my values and what is not. That helps a lot. I mean, your value systems are sort of everything. I don't know if you know who Mark Manson is, the author. He talks a lot about value systems. That guy is an absolute lunatic. He's so good. So I highly recommend him. He talks a lot about values. I've learned about habit formation. Habits are great. I never had a big problem with my habits. So, I mean, that's just something I enjoyed learning about for the sake of learning about it. It wasn't an extremely meaningful change for me. But yeah, expectation, values, relationships are a big thing. You know, you start reading all these studies about what, you know, what people are happiest with, or like how happiness is measured. And it seems to always come down to relationships. You know, no surprise there. Community is such an important thing for us. So, I think that I've always been very relationship driven, but since getting into this, I've only doubled down on it. And it's very rewarding. So, Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, small, like, daily practices, meditation is, I'm a daily meditator now, and that has, you know, that's helped me out immensely.
Have you always been able to do that?
No. Part of it is because I only, like, recently discovered what meditation is actually all about, and if more people knew what it's all about, it wouldn't be so goddamn hard to start doing. Because everybody, you know, I started it back in college, I got caught in the same trap as everybody. Like, if it's not fucking dark in this room and it's not completely silent and my eyes aren't closed and my back is not erect, this is not going to work. It's all these rules. So that makes it very hard. People are like, oh, my mind's not clear. It just isn't working.
Meditation is a little like learning to sing. You know, people can tell you sing from the diaphragm 100 times, but until it finally clicks, you just gotta kind of work your way toward it. But that idea of stillness and getting comfortable with stillness, I mean, that's something that I struggled with for a really long time. You know, because the moment any sort of silence came in. That was when I was forced to confront myself. And since I didn't want to do that, I figured the problem was meditation. So just get rid of the meditation and I don't have to talk to myself about anything.
Oh yeah, buddy. Yeah.
But eventually it is something that you kind of get better with. Is that something you encourage in your clients?
I do. I think it's one of, you know, the thing with coaching is I make a very harsh distinction of when I'm like encouraging somebody to do something or suggesting something, because coaching is not about throwing advice at people. It's about like helping to cultivate answers within themselves and, you know, kind of going back and forth. So I never like tell people what to do.
So it's more of an individual thing based on what the individual needs.
Yeah. I mean, meditation has certainly come up in a lot of my clients in terms of like their steps and their practices. But not everybody feels as though they necessarily need it, and that's okay. But it, to me, you know, just in my opinion, it does seem like something that is objectively beneficial to everybody. And it's like you said, you know, it is just a matter of not controlling the environment, but being okay with the fact that you can't control the environment. So being able to confront yourself and just watch yourself, it's about observation. And yeah, no, your thoughts aren't going to stop. That's not it. But it's about watching your thoughts, recognizing when you're thinking and not adding all this extra commentary to them. Oh, I was just thinking about dinner tonight. That was what I was thinking about. That's done. Okay. You know, and not getting angry about that or the dog barking or the lights flickering or whatever. You know, it's about just watching these things and not adding commentary to them. That's really the key with meditation. So in that sense, it's just not about putting right and wrong on things and just being able to detach your commentary from things. And that is something that I believe can help everybody, because what that turns into is people not adding extra mental commentary onto other stress in life. And really that's like a large source of people's pain that they don't realize is just feeling bad about feeling bad. Oh, this anxiety is kicking in again. Fuck, you know, I need to stop this. This is getting in the way of all these things in my life.
Yeah.
This is the problem. Now you're not only fighting your battle with anxiety, you're fighting, you know, yourself. And so I do think that meditation helps that, because it just teaches you to watch things and just see them for what they are. Without any, you know, extra commentary. Meditation's a fantastic thing, in my opinion.
So with all of the experiences that you've had getting yourself up to this point, is there a particular lesson that you would go back and tell the younger version of yourself?
That's funny. It's cute. Let me see. Little Greg. I think a lot of it is just about, a lot of it's about control, right? Because you're always trying to control things, especially as an adolescent. You know, you're trying to control who likes you. You're trying to, that's a lot of what it is. It's just like all of these seeking validation everywhere as a means of overcoming insecurity. So I think a lot of it is just, it's really just a matter of letting things be and not always assuming you know what's right, because it's incredible how many things just turn out in different ways. It's a plateau sort of lesson. It's a lesson you've heard before, but it is important. I think if one thing that I would tell everybody, I would say a kind of core theme of what I do now that I think can help everyone, including little me, is that like, you know, having goals and aspirations is unavoidable. You're always going to have your preferences. But I think if you can find a way to have your goals and be working towards them and making progress towards them, but also be happy where you are and not be so reliant on these goals coming true, if you will, I think it's important, because it not only addresses like, this not only enables us to like seek out progress that we want and have hope for the future, but it also doesn't allow us to feel like that future is always out of reach and that therefore that happiness is always out of reach, you know? So I'll give you a good example. Like for me, I've always thought that, like, I've always like really sort of romanticized this idea of marriage and having children, right?
Yeah.
To me, it just seems like it'd be such a great joy in life. And because of that, and because of my obsession, I need to make sure that I'm telling myself, yes, that's something I would love to do. It seems great, but I am also prepared to be happy and live a fulfilling life if that doesn't happen naturally, right? So not forcing that and just continuing to do things that I need to do that are fulfilling to me, that realistically will probably attract the right woman. But it just boils down to like, yes, have your goals, but don't be so reliant on them that your life has, you know, has no value if they don't come true. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and it's tricky. I mean, it involves, you know, some practice depending on where you are. But that's something that I've sort of started to live by. It's a great way of both staying present and appreciating things, but also having something to work towards and something to build upon.
I think that nothing rings truer than that.
Mm.
Thanks for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome. I've had such a wonderful time. Does that mean we're done? Are we done?
Yeah, we're done. We did it.
Ah, shucks. All right. Well, we'll have to do this again sometime. I had a wonderful time.
And I had a wonderful time as well. That was the amazing, talented, and just all-around delight to talk to Greg Audino. Very cool guy. If you want to get more, and I know you do, go to gregaudino.com and check out some of those videos he's got posted there. And they are entertaining as they are enlightening. You can also find all of his social links there. He's on the Facebook, he's on the Instagram, he's on the Twitter. I highly recommend the Instagram. It's a fun account. As for me, you can always find me all the places that everybody find things. I'm on the Instagram, I'm on the Twitter. You know, I'm in your head. How weird is that? I'm in your head right now, talking to you. And if I could tell you anything, it's don't kill yourself out there.